Hello, everyone, and welcome to the April 2021 meeting of Creating the Futures Board and Community. It's wonderful to be together. I've been looking forward to this. To anyone who may be joining us and watching online, please tweet to the hashtag Creating the Future. It's the only place we're going to look. So if you put comments in the blog or you text any of us, we're just going to be paying attention to the Twitter stream. I have not heard from anyone today that they are thinking about joining us in that way, but just in case, because sometimes people do. And it is delightful to be with all of you today. It's especially delightful to see all of the Zoom backgrounds. So Carl is in some sort of conservatory, Dimitri's on the beach. I'm sitting in the office. wonderful to be with all of you. Eli is joining us, wonderful. Good to see you, Eli. I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
As we get going, we want to first acknowledge, and I'm going to just read off a page that Angie prepared last time, which was so beautifully done that I'm just going to read off of that. We want to acknowledge the Indigenous peoples of all the lands that we are on today. While we meet today on a virtual platform, let's take a moment to acknowledge the importance of the land which we each call home. We do this to reaffirm our commitment and responsibility in improving relationships between nations and to improving our own understanding of local Indigenous peoples and their cultures. Let's take a moment of reflection to acknowledge the harms and mistakes of the past and to consider how we are and can each, in our own way, try to move forward in a spirit of reconciliation and collaboration. So if each of us will, as you're introducing yourself, acknowledge the lands that you are on, and if we can all introduce ourselves, tell us where you are, acknowledge the land you are on, and share something that has been awesome, powerful, meaningful in your life since we last got together, and whoever wants to start. I love the fact that it is always so different. You would think this is the first time we have ever done this each time we do it. It's like, oh no, she's gonna ask my name. Don't make me call on you, Justin.
Well, I was looking it up because I'm not in my, I am normally on Nacotchtank land in Washington, D.C., but I was just looking at, it looks like I'm in Nopé land here in Massachusetts. So I was doing a little Googling there of the indigenous folks of whose land I am sitting on. My awesome is I am sitting on Martha's Vineyard off the coast of Massachusetts in the United States, and I am awaiting my father, who I just heard got off the ferry in his car and should be arriving here in about 30 minutes. So if I have to pop off for just a couple of moments and pop back on, that's where I went.
Hugging your dad is the perfect reason to go.
Pretty awesome. Wonderful.
Who's next?
Shall I go next?
Sure, Carl, go ahead.
Everyone, I'm Carl. I'm creating the future's European outpost. My background, I believe, is Seattle, for those of you that recognize it. I'm just outside London in a place called St. Albans. As I think I probably said it last time, my nation are some of the original sort of colonists and invaders. So I'm afraid we are on our own land. Though St. Albans was where I live was actually occupied by the Romans and was the third largest Roman city. Awesome. Well, you know, I mean, I think some of you know, after 23 years of working in the same place, I've recently now changed, and I'm just starting up in the freelance world and trying to sort of think about sort of what next. And it's just been really good having lots of conversations with people about possibilities, I guess. So that's been quite awesome, actually.
Wonderful. It's good to see you. Good to have you here. Dimitri, you had said you want to go next?
Yes.
I'll share my...
I am Dimitri Petropoulos. I'm coming to you from the tropical island of Tucson, Arizona, where the waves are crashing on the shore. Traditional homeland of most recently the Tohono O'odham people. But this area of the Southwest was by many different peoples called Hohokam. I don't know that that was their name, but what we've assigned to the many peoples that traveled and lived in this area. Now, the Tohono O'odham have lived here for probably around 4,000 years, so that's a long time. My awesome is that in spite of the drought that we continue to be in, nature is moving forward, so there's trees that are blooming and the blossoms smell awesome. I ride my bike, and when I go down a street that has citrus, you just get this overwhelming aroma of citrus as you're riding. So that is my awesome is nature today.
That is awesome. Eli or Angie, anybody want to go next?
Go ahead, Eli.
Thank you, Hildy. Eli Ngote, California, part of Creating the Future, or a member, and I am currently in the Big Island of Hawaii, and this land was settled 800 years ago by Polynesians who came from the Society Islands. They're traditionally known as the Kanaka Maoli, Native Hawaiians, and it's my first time on this island, and it's been just mind-blowing. One of my biggest awesomes is that I got to swim with manta rays last night. So the majestic creatures with lots to teach us about simplicity and just embracing our environment.
Oh, wow. Wow, that sounds awesome.
Doesn't it?
And that's the tip of the iceberg. I mean, this is a magical place. Lots of wisdom and insights into life and living in nature, embracing nature.
Beautiful.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
We are so glad to have you here. Angie.
Hey, hi, everybody. I am here in Omaha, Nebraska, which is also Omaha land and Sioux. And it's sunny out today, so I guess my awesome is spring. Yay. I've had my second shot, COVID shot, so hopefully I'm going to be able to get out and enjoy meeting with friends and family again soon. So that's my main awesome. I think the other awesome I'd like to share with you is not about me, but I just had that real great opportunity to work with a lot of wonderful people here at the School of Public Administration in Omaha, at the University of Nebraska Omaha. And everybody around me is winning all these awards lately, which has been so exciting. And I've sort of had a little bit of a, you know, some of them I wrote letters of recommendation or whatever. So I have a student who was featured by the Higher Education, a diversity scholar, one of 10 in the country that he was selected. So Felipe Blanco, and very exciting. And then my colleague, Jody Benson, just got the teaching award for our college. And I nominated her for that. And then I had a colleague who just won a Fulbright to the Czech Republic. And I had written a letter for support for her. So, you know, like really awesome to see people, you know, having these exciting things happen to them, even though COVID times has been really tough. I'm really excited that, yeah, we're sort of can celebrate people still and move on to like bigger and better things in the next year.
Wow. That is awesome. That is definitely awesome. And it backs up on my awesome. My name is Hilda Gottlieb. I am also in Tucson, Arizona, although I'm not on the beach that you are, Dmitri, which is the traditional lands of the Taunakam. And my awesome is definitely my second shot. I got it this weekend, and I think I may have mentioned to y'all that there's a group of us women, there's four of us, who have been getting together for drinks maybe 4 or 5 times a year for the past almost 30 years. And starting this year, obviously that wasn't going to happen. And so we started with a Zoom meeting, which led to every week we've been getting together on Zoom, which has just been truly delightful. And by the end of the month, all four of us will have had our second shots, and we're going to see each other in real life. And I'm going to get to hug my best friend, and it's pretty, pretty exciting. So I think we're all sort of channeling that, Justin, you and your dad and Angie, and there's just something pretty wonderful about seeing a tiny little bit of light at the end of this tunnel. That is totally worth it. That is pretty much the awesome. The other awesome I have leads right into the next item on our agenda, which is that.
Could you turn the sound off on your phone?
Thank you. the next item on our agenda is to welcome Eli Angote to our board. And that is definitely an awesome. So delightfully happy to have you here. And Eli, can you just talk a smidge about, I know I'm putting you on the spot and didn't ask you ahead of time, but you can just talk a little bit about why you said yes.
Yeah, well, you know, how could I say no, Hildy? After attending a few meetings and meeting all of the amazing people who were here to literally create a new future, ever since I saw Hildy speak at the Hank Grosso Forum in San Francisco back in 2019, I was inspired to look deeper at, systems change. Hildy's phrase collective enoughness really resonated with what I had already felt was an immense abundance on this planet, and I wanted to see how I could try to proliferate change. I could add to the change in a more exponential way. I mean, I've always been talking about the same topic in different ways, about othering and how to transcend othering, because we really are the same, we're the human community, right? All trying to coexist peacefully with our, fellow family members, plants and other, animals and microbes. So it's been really an honor to be invited to join the team. And I'm hoping that I can contribute to this kind of return to innocence, in a sense, of the human community. So thanks for having me.
Our joy. Totally.
I just want to say I had a chance to have a conversation with Eli, and I learned a lot about notaries. Not only how cool they are, but also how cool Eli is. So
thanks, Justin.
Very, very much so. Very much so. We will have Vu joining us late, if I haven't mentioned that. And we will get going. I put a link in the chat box, just to help remind what we talked about last time. So if it is helpful, we've got two topics we're going to be talking about today. The first is hopefully finishing up our board recruitment conversation. And the second is to start into a conversation that I think is going to take us many, many meetings, which I'm actually looking very forward to, which is what it will look like in practice to be an integrity board. A question that I'm being asked a lot as people are starting to see what we're doing and curious about what does that mean in practice? And I keep saying, well, that's the next thing we're going to talk about. So that's where we'll be. But let's review a little bit where we've been on the recruitment conversation and see how we can wrap up. We used catalytic thinking to step into recruitment. We asked who will be affected by our recruitment process. And what's interesting is we came up with, I'm not gonna count, but I'm gonna say 12, 15 different people and or entities that would be affected by our recruitment process, which is always interesting because we either think frequently in recruitment, we think about what is it gonna be for the board? Who do we want for the board? What is that gonna look like for the board? Maybe what does that look like for the organization? Rarely, what does that look like for the potential board member? And rarely beyond. So we talked about who would be affected by our board recruitment process. We talked about what being on the board makes possible for somebody joining the board, and we talked about what that makes possible for creating the future. We talked about the kinds of experiences we want people to have on the board and importantly in the recruitment process itself. And then we dove into, and that's the thing that I put into the chat, we dove into the conditions for success. What would people joining the board need to know in order for our outcomes to be realized? What would they need to feel? What would they need to be assured of? And very specifically, focused last time on the question of what BIPOC folks would need to know and feel and be assured of to join our board. And we started to step into action steps. And in terms of the action steps, we acknowledged that so frequently in doing board recruitment the standard way, we look for qualifications. We look for, you know, somebody who's a this and somebody who's a that, somebody who's a lawyer, somebody who's connected, somebody. And what we don't realize is that those qualifications are just indicators of the qualities that we want in people. And so we talked instead about the qualities that we want. And that's at the bottom of that post that I put in the chat is the qualities we wanted to make sure everybody had, the qualities that it would be nice if at least some people had, and the qualities we never want to see in a million years. And so I thought that we might start, if you all want to take a look at that, and I can read it for folks who are only listening today. I'd like to see what we can add to, if there is anything that we might add to either the qualities we are definitely looking for that everybody's got to have, the qualities that it would be nice if some people had, and the qualities that we never, ever, ever want to see. And Eli, could you just confirm for me, when you go to the chat, do you see that there? Because I know sometimes people, if they join after, you see it. Okay.
I know I when do. You can,
good. In Zoom, I know sometimes if you join after something's been added to the chat, you don't see it. So I wanted to just make sure. But we said every board member must have passion for the mission of systems change, time for attending meetings once a month for 2 hours on the second Monday of the month, although that second Monday is not in stone and we can change it if that makes sense. A spirit of exploration versus dogmatically, this is how we do things. A strong social justice focus, a team player, a willingness to explore each of our own personal integrity and the alignment of our own walk and talk, and commitment to the values that guide our work. We said it would be nice to have people who are already working to disrupt systems, but that not everybody has to be in that place. And one of the two never in a million years things that we came up with are people who want things to stay as they are. And that sort of links to the other ones, which was know-it-alls, people giving all kinds of advice, which is the way it frequently is. So keeping the things the way they are, that's frequently, but that's not how you do it. So is there anything else that you all might put into any of those categories?
I'm going to disrupt it slightly by saying someone with a sense of humor, because social change is bloody hard. And, you know, a little bit of levity from time to time is one of the things that I like about these meetings.
I will agree.
Must have.
Yes.
Must have.
Absolutely. I really like the must have of the willingness to explore not just our own personal integrity, but our own beliefs and assumptions. There's something really powerful in, and I think we've all experienced it in these meetings over time, of our own ahas, our own, you know, we talk about that in the reflections at the end of the meeting all the time. You know, what stood out to you? And it's like, I never thought of, or I always believed that. And there's something there about questioning our own assumptions. Is there somebody that would like to take notes today? Forgot to ask that at the beginning.
Sorry, I should have offered to do that. I'm happy to do that if that's useful, if the last lot of notes were any good.
They were awesome, and stop apologizing.
Okay, cool.
Anything else?
I would say, well, I think sort of in that same vein, just as I've been watching other people on boards that I've been facilitating and thinking about this, people that believe being a board member is different than being themselves. That would be a never. but there is, you know, there's always this, well, what am I supposed to do as a board member? And I think, I mean, this is part of the bridge, I think, to the conversation around what we mean by integrity, but I just sit in board meetings. I'm like, you people don't seem like you are yourselves. Like, it's just a general thing. Like, I'm like, because I often have the opportunity to talk to a lot of the people I'm facilitating outside of the board meeting. I'm like, where's the person I talk to? Like, so I think there's something about that, and maybe we frame it in the positive, which is, you know, the must have is people that see themselves as themselves when they are serving in this role.
And I think there's just in the positive and the must have, people who are willing to share their whole selves, because sometimes that's, you know, for a lot of reasons, and that's okay. You know, one of the other, and it sort of goes to the team player kind of thing. I've been coaching someone who is dealing with their board, and they told me that there's one board member comes out of a CEO position in a very large multinational corporation who doesn't listen, who is always right, and who talks over everyone. So, you know, we've talked about the not listening, we've talked about the always right, but I think that the team player piece is being part of a conversation, not dominating the conversation.
Yeah, and I guess that, yeah, no bullies or sexual predators or any of those kinds of things. Goes without saying, perhaps, but.
Yeah.
I think it's assumed when I look up at the must-haves, the would-be's, and the nevers, that people who see this as something other than a career feather, you know, that they're not interested in joining the board to be able to say, look, I'm on this board, and put it in their resume. So we don't specifically address that, and I infer that from everything else that's there, but, you know, maybe we should specifically talk about that.
What would it be nice if we had on the board? Like one or two people had this quality, but not everybody has to.
Maybe somebody with a strong
with a spiritual practice of some sort, grounded in embracing of something bigger than oneself, however that might manifest or appear.
Love it. Yeah. Beautiful.
Somebody who embraces mindfulness, you know, in all its forms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if you all have read, there's a wonderful book. It's called, I think, The Book of Joy. It is by the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. And it is about their last time spending time together and the conversations between them. And it's just beautiful. Do you all feel,
one of the things that I, one of the people that I really like when she joins the board is Jane Gotham. And what Jane brings to it is a real sort of wisdom and a steadiness. And I think if we're going to have more people who are possibly disruptive and thinking out of the box, Jane just brings a sort of a calmness to it that I really like.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful. As we think of additional qualities, let's add them into the mix and let's dive into the process then for recruiting folks. One thing I do want to request, and you reminded me, it fits perfectly in the conversation that we've just had, Carl, but it did remind me, if you all have ideas about people you might like to see on the board, please put it in the chat and do not say it out loud. As we talk about process, it will become clear why. But if there's someone, and like I said, yours fit perfectly, Carl, in what we were talking about, but you reminded me, let's put it in the chat and refrain from saying those names out loud. What I thought I would share is what the process has been to date, and it does not need to be that, but what it has been to date. And that has been very simple. We all know that we have all been encouraged to invite folks to join board meetings who just, we've been having a conversation with, they've been interested, they've been curious. I'll give you an example. I had a delightful conversation this past month. Had a delightful conversation this past month with two women who are consultants who are working with a group that wants to blow up their governance and they don't know what they want to build. And after an hour-long conversation with them, it made perfect sense to invite them, would you like to come to a board meeting? They couldn't make it this time, but they would certainly like to be it next time. So we have all been sort of inviting people as we go. I know I've been inviting more than most, but that comes with the role. What has been the process to date then is we have invited people who are basically interested in our work. I think it's actually how each of you became board members. Initially, you were just interested in what we were doing, and it wasn't to recruit, it was just to see and feel what we're doing, to take that out into the world or to attend the meeting for whatever reason. And then after a while, seeing if that's somebody that we wanted to invite to the board. And it felt very emergent, felt very natural, and has just been in a way, the thing that I noticed early on in board recruitment, and my first book was on board recruitment. And the thing that I noticed that made no sense to me whatsoever was that, and this was 20 years ago, that the way most boards recruit board members is they come up with a bunch of names. They tend to all fit in the wouldn't it be nice category, like would they have money, would they volunteer, would they whatever. And then they invite them to the board. And then their first board meeting is the first time they've ever been in the room. And that never made any sense to me. It was like, how does this person know if there's a fit? How does this person know if they want to be, how does this person know if they like anybody? Now you're on the board and it's too late to say no, and then you're stuck. And so what we've done over time is just folks who are interested in our work, come play. And if you really want to keep coming back, you tell us. And if the board keeps wanting you to come back. And I loved Vu's response when we were talking, Eli, about adding you to the board, which was everyone said, yes, yes, yes. And Vu said, I thought he was already on the board. That natural feeling is just so lovely when we have all sort of gotten to know each other already, and then we get to invite folks. We don't have to keep doing it that way. We can keep doing it that way. We can do it however we want to. I guess one of the things that I would ask you all is, both in watching boards you've been on or been part of or consulted to or whatever, and as a board member who has been recruited to a board, what has your experience been in recruitment that has been really good? What have you seen and experienced? Like I said, whether you're on a board recruiting people or you've been recruited to the board, what did good feel like? What recruitment processes have you seen that you went, yeah, this is really awesome? Either we can't think of one, or there are none.
Well, I'll start with Carl. You sent an example of an onboarding process earlier on. Was it Trello? That looked pretty cool. But I guess I've been part of boards where we do a formal orientation, like a whole day long thing. And I've been part of boards where we really don't do anything, or it's more like, you know, you just kind of show up, hang out and learn as you go along. I'm not sure the formal orientation ultimately helped that much, because there's just like this pouring of information, but until you're actually doing it, right? It's, you know, so I do like the way that the approach that we've taken so far of like having people come and kind of be part of the discussion and learning. And then, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me. But I guess there's also, I mean, maybe it takes a brave person to do that too, in a way, like if you're coming to be part of a discussion that you don't know for sure what's going to happen or how it's going to happen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead, Carl.
Really interesting. Earlier in the conversation, we talked about people who come to board meetings and are themselves and be themselves. And that made me sort of reflect that, I mean, an important part of the orientation is making it very clear that you can be yourself when you come to the board. Because I think that analysis that people often... I've heard this expression many times, that trustees or directors, they leave a part of their knowledge and skills and themselves at the entrance to the boardroom when they walk in, and actually they make suboptimal decisions because they don't bring them their whole selves. So for me, that the important orientation is creating a sense from the get-go that there are no stupid questions, that you can say the things that you want to say, it's never inappropriate to ask questions that you may perceive to be unwelcome.
Yep. The onboarding process that I've seen that I've really liked, and I'm noticing that we've gone to the onboarding and the orientation and skipped over the recruitment. So maybe there is no recruitment process that we've liked. I'm really reflecting on what you said, Angie, in terms of just dumping, here's the bylaws and here's the financial policies and here's the past years of this and the past year, and just dumping a lot of stuff. And the best recruitment process I ever was part of when back in my consulting days was when we would ask groups, what do you wish you knew before you got on the board? And they never mentioned the bylaws. They never mentioned all the stuff that we throw at people. It was sometimes as simple as, where's the bathroom? Do we eat? You know, I mean, just like some of the basics, like what is the culture of the board? What is the, and so I've really enjoyed that. And I think that might be a discussion that is worth our having. Does it feel like to you that the process that we have used so far is a process that we want to use for recruiting board members? Invite people just to be part of a conversation, not with any expectation that they are going to be on the board, and get to know them and invite people as we feel comfortable doing so. Is that something you'd like to continue? Do you have ideas about a different way of doing it?
I tend to get immersed in whatever I'm working on and it bleeds into everything else. So I'm looking at education platforms and how we use those education platforms and how we use our education platform. And what I'm thinking about in this is a class for the board member, the prospective board member, that has all of the stuff that would normally be dumped on them, which they can access as they want or don't want, which has a conversation like we're having here accessible so that they're at the board meeting, but they're also able to access all of this in their own time, in their own way. This is not a fully formed thought at this point. It's just, you know, I'm envisioning a way of communicating with potential board members and board members who come on online that fills in some of the blanks. I mean, we're addressing a lot of the emotional stuff, which is, you know, you're welcome, you're valuable, whatever, you know, whoever you are, we want you to be welcome and feel at home. You know, there's also a degree of, well, do I know what I need to know? You know, do I need to go back and watch 10 years of board meetings to get caught up on where everybody is? So I'm just sort of trying to combine, you know, what tools we have. Thank you, COVID, for creating this comfort level in virtual, you know, conversations. What would that mean in terms of how we onboard people in a way that we handle the emotional part, and yet they can access anything else that they need? And so, maybe it's access to classes. Maybe I'm not really sure, but I'm sort of thinking about it from how do we do that in that way.
I am going to ask one more time about recruitment versus orientation, because it's clear that's where we want to go, and I'm excited to go there. I just want to make sure we finish the first conversation.
Okay, so I feel responsible for going down this path, so I apologize. I'd like to say, first of all, that we had some discussion last meeting about, you know, sort of recruiting or thinking about our, you know, diversity and recruiting in that, right? So I want to make sure we don't kind of lose sight of that. And the other thing that I wanted to add was, I think that the process we use for onboarding is a good one. I think I find it sometimes hard, like, how do we invite people to the discussion is what we're talking about, I think. So the recruitment is getting people to come to be part of the discussion, especially reaching out to people that maybe we, you know, being thoughtful about who that is and reaching out to them and inviting them. So the invitation process is what we need to talk about further and what we would need to have to do that. I know we in the past when, you know, you've encouraged us to do that, it's sometimes difficult to know what to say and how to frame that. So maybe we can have some discussion on that.
I think that's awesome. I think that's awesome. Yeah. I tend to forget that the stuff that feels very natural for me can sometimes feel daunting for other people. And so I apologize for that. And yeah, I think there's some very simple things that we can that we can do. What's been interesting for me is, and I guess part of this is each of us seeing ourselves as ambassadors for creating the future, is the degree to which we talk about creating the future in our real lives. And I think that's really the prerequisite to inviting somebody is having the conversation about what creating the future is doing. Even if it's not, hi, I'd like to talk to you about creating the future, bringing it up in conversations that we're already having. And if people are intrigued, it's real easy to say, you know, we're having a board meeting if it's interesting. So it really is that first step, which is each of us seeing ourselves as ambassadors for creating the future in a way that's not pushy, that's not, you know, selling something, that really is just, it's front of mind when we're talking about stuff. And each of us is always talking about stuff like this in our day-to-days. I also wanted to riff for just a second on what Carl, what you were saying about making it clear that we can be ourselves. And others have mentioned this as well. What people tend to in most boards, at least most boards I've encountered, bring into the boardroom is their position rather than their person. I've been recruited because I am the XYZ of XYZ company, and therefore I am showing up representing my company, and therefore you must want my business knowledge, and so that's what I'm going to spew all the time. And so I think that there's a big piece, and hopefully we make that clear in the conversations that we have. But it occurred to me when you were talking, Carl, that this really is about not bringing that position into the room, bringing the person into the room. Does that kind of invitation process feel comfortable to you all? And Angie, does that even remotely start to answer your question about, because it's more organic than here's the three questions to ask for somebody who you may want to invite.
Oh, sorry, I can unmute myself. I'm wondering, maybe this is going back to some of our earlier discussions about, you know, before we'd had discussion about like, why would someone want to be on the board? You know, et cetera. Maybe we even need to start smaller. Like, why would anybody want to come here and have a conversation for 2 hours on a, you know, Monday? And what can we do to, what can we say that would help them, intrigue them enough? If they haven't already, you know, like with Eli, you said that you had kind of gotten connected through an event and, you know, they sort of, I don't know, maybe actually, Eli, how did you end up coming from being at the event to being here? Maybe that would also be, you know, like, what's that process? And then how can we frame that for an invitation?
Yeah, thanks, Angie. I simply, once again, wanted to get to know Hildy because of this, right, incredible presentation, the story about Tucson and the diaper bank. I was intrigued just by hearing about what catalytic thinking looks like, you know, talking to the people in the audience saying, hey, you know, what do you have? How can you guys connect and share resources? So I simply persisted in, you know, getting a call with Hildy. It took a while. You know, she's busy and awesome, doing lots of things. Patiently waited until I got my turn and we got to speak. And I was, once again, you know, even more blown away by kind of what she's doing. And I went to the website too. I think she emailed me and said, hey, if you want to, you know, chat, I'm kind of really busy focused on this thing that I'm doing. Here's how you can learn more about it. So that was one part of it. seeing kind of like how formal this is, and it's an organized group. There's a meeting. I can watch meetings that are on there. So when we spoke, I was primed to ask a bit more about it. And she said, "Hey, if you want to participate, you know, come to one of the meetings." So she made an invitation, and I, you know, got around to it and just never stopped. I mean, you know, it's amazing. The people were incredible, great conversation, and you know, I really, once again, just resonated deeply with what was being said. So whenever I'm talking to people who I feel have, right, this wider scope and are concerned about the way things are going on in the world and really want to change it, I always make sure to drop, hey, you know, I'm part of this amazing group, and, you know, check out the website, creatingthefuture.org, and just kind of seeing what happens, right? Who's going to be interested? Who's going to have the bandwidth to then say, hey, you know what? You know, I'm going to be checking out one of the meetings. So very organic, very laid back. And I feel like that's how I built my board, actually, for our company is I've invited people, just come and check us out. We meet every used to be every Wednesday. Now it's one Wednesday a month. And I just put them on the invite. And eventually somebody shows up, and some people come a second time, some come a third time, and those folks end up becoming kind of part of my core advisory group. So I love the organic approach, and I love Dimitri's idea to then have also a repository of information that they would need. I think the website serves, you know, in many ways as part of that, but for new members, I guess something a bit more structured could be really good as well. I think I might incorporate that into my own kind of board recruiting strategy.
Yeah, one of the things that I was thinking about along that line, and thank you, Eli. thank you for that. And thank you for that specifically because, and I'm so smiling, that it's been such a long time for Angie and Justin and Carl. They don't remember how they were invited to come to a meeting. And so
I do.
Do you? You want to tell us?
I had participated in the immersion course, and you invited me to, or I think you just said, I think you opened up actually the board meeting to everyone who had graduated from that session, and I came in, and then I think you followed up and said, people like you, could you stay? to paraphrase what that was, but I do think, if I could just put something in, Eli, I actually really appreciate you sharing that, because, you know, Hilde, you're talking about orientation versus recruitment, and I think what this is demonstrating is it should be one and the same. Yeah. People, when they are being recruited, they should be orienting themselves to it. And I think that's one of the beauties of this process, where we basically say, look, you can go see any meeting in the past, and people who are, you know, highly motivated, like Eli, will go and watch them. Other people will go, well, that's nice. Glad it's there. But I think this invitation of you can just be a participant in a conversation, it also orients people very quickly to what we are, because to Angie's point, it's kind of hard to describe, like, well, what is this? And I actually think it's part of, as we're talking about, you know, the integrity board versus the minimal viable compliance piece of the board. You know, I had mentioned a couple meetings ago, I had sort of reframed it as, you know, this is an integrity body, because we are sort of stripping away some of the weight of boardiness. And so I think because so much of what people were describing, and even Dimitri, what you were describing about sort of this, you know, onslaught of stuff, well, that's because we're asking them to make decisions about the organization. That's why we feel like they have to know everything about the organization. You don't have to know anything about creating the future to participate in these. You do have to understand catalytic thinking, or be open to sort of making sense of it as we're going through. But I think that the the fact that we are not putting that weight on people, that you have to decide the decisions, the strategic decisions of the organization, removes a tremendous amount of what orientation is all about. Because really the orientation is about covering butts, saying you're supposed to be informed to make decisions about the budget, about the staffing, about the policy, about the and we've removed all of that. We've said, that's not what this is about. This is about making sure those questions are being engaged in, that there's a process that, that again, brings integrity to it. But we don't actually bear the weight, which may also mean we don't bear some of the legal. I mean, that's part of the languaging too, is to think about the that weight. So there is, to me, I feel like, I mean, I'm sure that for Eli, you, there is still some learning and getting more comfortable, but as I think about, you know, I mean, the question I ask is, do you feel well-oriented having been recruited the way that you were recruited? So
that's a good question.
And I do, I want to say that I do, just by showing up consistently, once again, because I really believe in the mission, it's been easy to get to kind of what's underneath this, right? What's the ethos, sort of the values, back to values again, right? So critical. Those are harder to train or to learn because they're, it's part of who you are, which is what Carla said, you know, bring who you are to the board, which I think is definitely just what makes it so different and so special and unique.
And one of the things that I've been thinking about, and you know, you mentioned, Dimitri, having sort of a quote unquote class. I've actually been thinking about, because I wanted to send you some stuff, Eli. So I made a note that says, send Eli some stuff on catalytic thinking and et cetera. and then, pardon me. Sorry, allergies here are just off the charts. What occurred to me is that what we need is not orientation, quote, for new board members, but we need orientation for anybody that's going to be joining our meetings. And so what had occurred to me is having a single blog post that says, if you're going to be attending our meetings, here's stuff to know. And I think there's some of that already in the open meetings tab at our site, and I just don't remember. Just, you know, here's some stuff on catalytic thinking, here's where you'll find our values, here's how we be with each other, and et cetera. Because we are open and invite anyone to join in whatever way, and we're also, and this gets to the question, Angie, of inviting people. It's not just being in the room. We can invite people to watch and tweet. We can invite people to watch and comment later. So there's a lot of different ways that people can engage. If, for example, you know, and you mentioned, Angie, having the courage to, am I stepping into a meeting that I'm not going to be familiar with, and et cetera, to be able to say, you can watch it. You can just watch it. And if it's interesting to you, tweet along. If at some point you really want to be part of the conversation, here's my number, text me and we'll invite you in. I mean, there's a million different ways that it can happen that are, again, organic. But I think that it's really important, especially if we're inviting everyone to feel that they can participate, whether you're, quote, on the board or not, that that the orientation be the same for everybody. And that'd be simple.
Justin, what you said really just flips the way I'm feeling about this, the way I'm thinking about this, which you often do. So, you know, good job. That, you know, I think about years and years of being on, working with boards, where someone would be asked to be on a board and they say, well, why do you want me? You know, I'm just the whatever. You know, I don't have a position, I don't have money, I don't have anything. And if they're on the board, if we're asking them to participate for their values, which is really what integrity is talking about, that opens the door to virtually anybody could be on the board. And it also, making that clear, also removes that sense of inhibition or I'm an imposter. you know, sitting on this board. No, I'm not. I'm a human being who has values, and that's what integrity is about. So thank you, Justin, for, you know, kind of reminding on that. And yes, Hildy, I think we need to have, and I think it would be helpful to, if we all, the odds are with everything we've done over the years, we have it. It's somewhere on the website, as are many things, but have a, you know, maybe a clear button that says, are you interested in attending? Here's the quick thing of what you need to know to do that.
Having it be on every meeting, so the announcement for every meeting. Yeah. One of the things that's occurring to me, and I'd like to have this conversation, I'm vacillating, I will tell you. And leave it up to you all if you want to have the conversation now or if we want to hold off. But I think what we're really asking in the feeling comfortable inviting people to the board members, to the board meeting in whatever way, is the question of what would it take for each of us to feel comfortable as ambassadors for creating the future? You know, what would it take for you to what does that role really mean, and for each board member, and where do each of us individually feel comfortable stepping into that? So if that's a conversation that you all would like to have now, if that is something that you would like to wait and go on to the other stuff, but it seems like we have a invitation process that y'all are comfortable with. Invite people to meetings, hang out for a little bit. If we like them, we ask, can we keep them? And then have an orientation process that is really just all of the stuff that goes to every attendee of every meeting, rather than it being the quote board orientation. Let's start with just that. Is there consensus that that is where we want to go for right now? Is there anybody that feels that is not a good way to go?
I think it sounds good. I mean, we'll probably talk more about who we want to reach out to and being kind of strategic about that. I guess the only other thing I really like the idea of having that kind of website where it kind of lays out things. And then the next step for me would be really helpful to have, okay, I can send an email like to whomever we, you know, decide we want to outreach with, you know, that link, but also maybe that information or in that email, we like, what's the one or two lines about invitation, about why we're inviting them or why we think that they would, the motivation part. Not just the how to, but why, you know, yeah.
And to address that. And again, for me, it has always, the invitation itself has always just come up naturally because it is part of a conversation. So last time we were together, or the time before, I don't remember, Eli suggested somebody that would love to get to know what creating the future is about. That's just a conversation about, so what is creating the future? And that's it. And whoever it is, you know, Angie, you introduced me to Katie, which was just a delightful conversation. I got to know about work she's doing. She got to know about work that I'm doing. And it's very, very natural in that setting to say, you know what? Our board's going to be talking about some interesting stuff about integrity the next time we're together. Do you want to be part of that conversation? I'd love you to be there. So it's not, it just is natural and organic in a conversation that, and that's why I'm focusing on the ambassador part rather than the inviting part. What does it mean for each of us to be in conversation about creating the future? Because quite honestly, it's a huge, it's a huge thing that just creates more and more ripples. If, and I hate to just say it like this, that if I'm not the lightning rod, if I'm the only one that's talking to people, then we're stuck in the Hildy show and this thing only goes so far. if each of us is ambassadors and talking about it. And you know what, I'd love to have coffee, because the stuff that you're talking about, I'm with this group that has been doing this really neat stuff. And it just seems like I'd love to talk to you about where you're at with this and what we're doing. And, you know, it's just, what does it take for us to be ambassadors for creating the future's work? And I know that each of you does it in your own way. This is saying with intention, I'm going to be an ambassador, and I'm going to, frequently for me, I'm listening for the opening. I'm just listening for the opening. Somebody wants to talk about some cool stuff they're doing. I got an invitation. Somebody wrote a book. I wish I could tell you how many people send me their books because they want to blurb at the back. Because I have time to do nothing but read their books. And sometimes they're great books, so I'm really glad they do. So if you're out there, send me your books and we'll figure it out. Somebody sent me a book that it seemed like they were doing similar work to what we're doing here at Creating the Future. And I was like, let's talk. And in those conversations, if it comes up that it makes sense to be at a meeting. But I think there's a big piece there, rather than the what do I say, is the bigger piece of are we ambassadors and what does that mean? So if you all want to have that conversation right now, we can. We can dive into the integrity piece. I leave that to you, but it seems like we have a recruitment and a orientation process.
I mean, I feel like sort of my short answer is just accepting the call to action. That it's not a question of, I mean, the conditions are already there for me. I mean, the catalytic decision-making is embedded in a lot of the work that I do, and I'm pretty transparent about it and how it's being used and acknowledging creating the future. And I think you know, there is a distinction between people who are, I think, curious and about catalytic decision making, but then more curious about the systems change and the bigger questions that come up. And I think, you know, just as you said, being a little bit more attuned to listening for that and feeling, you know, I actually do think that our meetings are easier to invite people to now, the nature of how the things that we are talking about. And again, I just keep coming back to the fact that we've been unmaking everything that makes it difficult to be on board. And I mean, you know, we've been doing that from the beginning. It's just, we've been progressively giving ourselves more and more permission to figure out how to do it. That's there. So I think that because now we have a very pretty clear distinction. I mean, I think now we're in a much better place to be able to say, it's not about coming to be a board member. It's about coming to be a person interested in this kind of thinking and systems change and integrity to approaches to system change that's easier to invite people to than saying you are going to be a trustee of creating the future.
In all of this, what keeps coming to mind is what words mean to people. And, you know, come to this conversation is real different than, you know, we're having a board meeting and, you know, you want to attend our board meeting. You want to, you know, be part of it. And even though you can explain what that means, you know, the word board meeting, you know, instantly means something to everyone. And obviously to this select wonderful group, it means something different as far as this board is concerned. But overall, so I don't have an answer. I'm not sure if there is an answer to that, but it is something that I think about that can be an obstacle a unnecessary obstacle to people who might really want to participate in this once they taste it. But that might be the initial block, is board meeting. I don't know if I want to do that.
No, I'm resonating. I'm thinking back several months ago. Vu told this wonderful parable about kids who were told to draw a fish. And just as I repeat that story a million times, and it was about the word board. And for those who may be watching and haven't heard the story, group of kindergartners was split in half. One half of the room was told to draw fish. That's it, just draw fish. And they drew all kinds of fish. And the other half of the room was told to draw fish. And here's an example of what a fish might look like. And all those kids drew that fish. And so when we say board, I love, Dimitri, the difference between be part of the conversation versus be part of our board meeting. Would you like to come to our board meeting is very different than would you like to come to this conversation? And because we know ahead of time what we're going to be talking about, we're going to be talking about recruitment, and we're going to be talking about it using catalytic thinking. And it just, you know, it sounds like it might be, you know, you, Mary, who I was talking to, you said that you're tired of the same old systems and they just don't work. We're going to be talking about just blowing up recruitment. Do you want to be part of that conversation? It's a very different thing than would you come to our board meeting? So I really appreciate that.
Eli, you talked about your board of trustees, I think, or you know how you referred to them, which advisors, I think is what you said. You know, your council of advisors. That sounds very different than a board. It may not be, but just in terms of one, it honors the people in a very different way without putting responsibility on them. Because boards, and this is what, you know, when you were referring to, Justin, is, you know, what's the liability, you know, of being a board member for an organization versus what's the liability of being an advisor to this effort that I really believe in. Maybe the same, but my impression is it's different. And I think that that's, again, words, very powerful.
That's great. So what would you all need to have? What would you need to know in order to be that kind of ambassador, to be having just conversations about creating the future? You're not inviting anybody to anything, just to be having those conversations, because the conversations are the precursor to the invitation. So if we're focused on the invitation, but we got to have the conversation before we can have the invitation. So what would you all need to know and to feel and to have in order to be stepping into more conversations about creating the future, just as they arise?
For me, it's not so much about what do I need to know. It's more about just knowing when it's just, it's what you said, Hildy, about, you know, I mean, it's there and you just know if someone's going to fit, I think. And so I think for me, it would be just when I'm in the conversation and I just sort of think, yeah, actually, you know, you'd enjoy this and you'd bring something to it. Yeah, so I'm quite relaxed about what I would say, and I've really enjoyed this bit of the conversation where we've actually said, don't invite people to join the board, invite people to come and join the conversation. I mean, it almost reminds me a bit of and I'm sorry I can't quite remember sort of the language, but I've seen fundraising stuff that says don't ask people to give, invite them to come and solve the problem type stuff. Same sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I think I'm okay with what's next.
You know, it is really interesting to me. Each of you, and I know this for a fact, has brought up creating the future in all kinds of conversations. Carl, every once in a while, I'll suddenly be tagged in a tweet. I don't know who this person is. I don't know what it is. But you're saying to them, and you are very active on Twitter. You saying, you know what, Hildy's the one who you need to be talking about. So you do this. Angie, you built an entire class around catalytic thinking, and you have conversations once a week that are infused with creating the future. I've been in your class. I've taught in your class. Justin, you're teaching this stuff all the time. Eli, you're talking about our stuff and introducing us all the time. So I love the fact that we're talking about a reticence to do something that y'all are already doing. I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it would be helpful to your point earlier about like knowing this is what we're going to be talking about the next time that we can specifically say, we've been talking about this issue, we're going to be talking about it, you might want to come, and that kind of thing.
So I have a friend, Emily, and she a series she calls Coming to the Conversation Curious. So 2 minutes, she brings someone on, and she asked two questions about, you know, about their professional life. For me, she asked me, you know, what is it? What are the things in the last 10 years that have informed how you do business, right? So I got to talk about how I, you know, ran a marathon and how I did this 10-day Vipassana retreat, you know, and showcase kind of who I am, right? Without necessarily talking about the mechanics of what I do in business. And I love that series. And it connects to what we're saying here about coming, right, to a conversation, curious. So if there was a 2-minute thing where Hildy brings someone on who is working with catalytic thinking, right, it's this implied invitation for folks to kind of, hey, wow, that sounds really good. You know, what drew Justin to this organization? What drew Carl, drew Angie, drew myself? So for you to do just a 2-minute video, a 90-second video, and post that on all the platforms, that would be very powerful to invite folks to a conversation, right? So I think that could be, there's something there I think that could be really handy about.
There's, and here's how I know there's something there. We've graduated from the huge notebook to this I got to put on my bulletin board. So thank you.
She would be a great person as well to invite to the conversation. I'm going to put her LinkedIn in the chat.
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. Do you all feel like are we done with the conversation? Are we feeling comfortable with it? Are each of you feeling like we've accomplished what we need to? We've got a recruitment process. We've got an orientation process, which starts the minute people start showing up, which is pretty awesome. We have a sense of what it would take to be ambassadors, and we have a voule.
Hi, Boo.
Hey, Boo.
He's still getting set up.
Oh, hey, everyone. So sorry.
Hello. That's okay. We're happy to
that's
see
okay.
you.
That's okay. Boo, long as the park was fun with your kids, all is good.
Yeah, sorry about that. We had a nurse practitioner student, so then her work had to be verified by an actual nurse practitioner. So it took like 2 hours when it was supposed to have taken 45 minutes.
Oh, well. Your timing is perfect. We just finished everything and done.
Are you serious? This is great. I should be
out. The world has been changed. There's no more poverty. There's no more racism. We're done. Go have a beer.
Coincidence? I don't think so. Yeah.
We basically wrapped up the conversation about recruitment and orientation. And would one of you share with Vu what we came to regarding recruitment and orientation?
Yeah, Vu, we've decided you're going to take lead and you're going to do it for us.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate that. My kids need another checkup. I'll see you later.
I think how I would describe it is that we talked about how some of the best recruitment actually sort of very much merges into and is orientation. they're one and the same thing. And we also talked about the fact that we don't want to invite people to become board members. We want to invite them to come and join the conversation. And then organically, if they find that actually they've got a sense that they'd be missing out if they didn't come again, they hopefully come back and they're joining us because they want to join us because it's an interesting conversation that they want to participate in, not because it's a trophy on their CV and because they've been press ganged or something like that.
That's a great idea. That's how we snagged Eli. So
I think we snagged you too, baby. I've been snagging for a dozen years.
Excellent.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. We do have, 40 minutes left. One of the things that we talked about, Vu, is what it would take for board members to feel comfortable to be ambassadors for Creating the Future, to talk about Creating the Future. And we talked about the fact that we're already doing that. Each of us is already doing that in our own way, bringing it up when it comes up in conversation, having conversations, and just being a little bit more intentional about introducing people to who we are and what we're doing. So I think we're ready to move on to the next item on the agenda, which could take us a year, could take us 2 years, could take a month. We have made clear that the role of this board on my piece of paper is to ensure the integrity of the organization. And doing that really in two ways. One is making sure that we are walking the talk of our values, and the other is making sure we're compliant with any minimal regulations that we need to be compliant to. And so I guess there's probably two conversations to be had. One is, what do we want to do to fulfill the compliance role? And is that the role of, as several people have suggested over the past year we've been talking about this, is that something we want to do as a whole board? Is it something that one or two people want to just take on? We have a compliance committee, whatever makes sense there. Is it something that we want to take on as organizations frequently do with an audit committee, where the audit committee is not members of the board, that are just folks that are in charge of making sure that the audit is right? Is that what we want to do for compliance? Because it really is a more support role, even though it is what the board is legally accountable for. If the 990 is not filed, eventually they're going to come to the board and say, where's the 990? Is that something that we want to delegate to a small group who enjoy compliance? There are actually people who enjoy compliance. It's not me, but there are people who that's their bag. So there's that compliance piece. And then there is the, what does integrity, what questions does the board want the staff to be able to answer about all of these various things that are going to be coming up? And to make sure that we're all on the same page, many of you know that we are in the process of beginning a significant scale up of our impact, which means hiring a lot of people. It means raising a lot of money and hiring a lot of people. It is possible to do the kinds of proof of concept that we have done in the past with a small ragtag group of volunteers and people working on stipend wages. It's possible. And given our reluctance to step into funding arenas that we would really like to dismantle, we have sort of worked our way around with a, like I said, a ragtag team working on stipend wages. You can't scale our impact globally if we do that. And so to scale our impact on a global basis, we're going to need a real team of folks that are working full-time and compensated accordingly. And so that's going to be raising money. that's going to be hiring, that's going to be writing job descriptions, that's going to be coming up with compensation policies, and that's just for that. So as we're doing that, what questions are we going to be asking? Let's say we've got 10 people on staff. What questions are we going to want them to answer? We have a team of volunteers right now who runs our two teams of volunteers that run our two online communities. What questions do we want them to be able to answer? So we can pick a topic and say, when it comes to compensation, you know, when it comes to recruiting staff, et cetera, what questions will lead you all to feel that we're walking the talk with integrity? Or we can handle the compliance piece first, whichever y'all want to, I leave it to you.
So I have initial thoughts on the compliance component, which I can share if people are comfortable starting there, because I actually, my first instinct is that one's not quite as complicated as the other. So 45 minutes, we might. So 45 minutes, we might get somewhere. to honor Carl, that at the end of the meeting, what do we have that's there? So if we think about sort of what we're trying to make possible in compliance, it basically, I interpret that as we need to make sure all the rules are followed. And, you know, this is one of the places where actually, you know, the Maryland Nonprofit Standards for Excellence, they have a legal compliance checklist. I mean, they recommend people create a spreadsheet that says, what are all the things you have to comply with? You know, your corporate filings, your blah, 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 you know, it's using that list. And so from the integrity lens, the question would be, do we have that list that captures all of the to-dos? What are all the things that have to be done and maintained and kept up to date? And, you know, is there a staffing process in place to do, because most of that stuff is staff oriented. I mean, it's operational stuff. It's not governance stuff. I mean, almost all of it is operational stuff. So, you know, I would see that there is a small team. You know, again, if we're thinking about this compliance team, there's a group that sort of is in essence, the stewards of that. Basically saying, hey, is this updated? What's the current status on all of these to-dos? Are there concerns? Are there places where, you know, the risk is basically in not meeting the expectation or not meeting the commitment of those? So that's one piece that is very just pragmatic, practical, like, this is a logic game. Like, let's just put the logic pieces together. So that's I know is much more in sort of the regulatory legal compliance world, which is, you know, it's the quickest one to get us in trouble. It's logically the easiest one to avoid getting in trouble with if we just have a system.
Yeah. And that team could report to the board at regular intervals, and that's the board maintaining the integrity. Other thoughts? Because I agree with you, Justin. I think it's very cut and dried. And I also think that the sorts of people that are going to be attracted to our board conversations are going to be the kind of people who will have no patience with the, was the 990 filed? Yeah, okay, fine, whatever. And vice versa, that the people who are adamant about this particular line item on the 990 are going to lose their minds at our board meetings.
I'm being seeking to move on too quickly, but you mean the way we've just talked about, I mean, it's relatively straightforward. I mean, it's someone does it. I think personally, I will be of the view that once a year that we should all look at the filing and make sure that we're happy with it, but not spend a huge amount of time on it. Because ultimately we are, I guess, as the directors are legally responsible for it. But the stuff that really matters is not that. The stuff that really matters are day to day, are we making decisions that reflect the values that we espouse? And, you know, stating the obvious, but I mean, there are so many examples, aren't there, of companies, of charities that file reports and are audited and so on, but things have still gone badly wrong because there isn't that integrity board for asking the questions about how are you doing this. So in answer to your question about what are the questions that you want staff to be able to answer, I think for me there's almost sort of there are two lots of questions, and I don't know if this is, I mean, it's almost like the formative and the summative evaluation type questions. The formative ones being, are the way that you are discharging the mission of the organization? Yeah, is it in line with what we've asked you to do? And if we were to talk to the people that you work with, would they agree with that? And then there's almost the summative element, which I think is worth asking, and I don't think it's something that we talk about that much, but here goes. Does the model work? I mean, is it your view from going out and being the people actually who are practicing this stuff on a day-to-day, is all the stuff that we've been saying for all these years that we believe, are we right?
Of course we are.
So I'm going back to the, you know, we started this by totally re-envisioning and blowing this whole thing up. And, you know, we said the idea of a minimal viable board. So the board that actually has the legal responsibility, we really were trying to strip that down and even out of this group. And so I'm sort of thinking, a little bit structurally, if we have that minimum viable board, the actual trustees, which are, you know, 3 to 4 people, however they are, who I think have the responsibility of making sure that whatever this compliance tool is, you know, found. I think to Carl's point, another piece that I would envision that body having, which is what I currently tell existing board, there is a fiduciary responsibility. Are the assets being used appropriately to advance the mission? There, and this is very structural, but what if we set it up that body of 4 had to consult with this body, whatever it is, this integrity body, to basically get some consensus from this group that yes, the body of work has efficacy, to Carl's point, and we feel like the resources are being well used. And by doing that, this body is not actually the legal responsible body, but it's to sort of what Eli was saying, a group of advisors who we can really bring in and say, does this have efficacy? We don't have a vested interest because we're not the legally sort of accountable body. We want to just know, hey, does it not? And if in a conversation among us, which we would have to figure out exactly what that looks like, we say, yeah, this seems judicious, then that body, that minimal body basically sort of gets the check mark to say, we vetted this against others, and we believe, you know, so we're signing off on it as the legal entities that are there. So it gives some buffer to that body, but it also gives some buffer to this body that we're no longer the, you know, we're not signing off on a budget because we don't know enough to sign off on a budget. But what we are doing is, I think to Carl's point, we're really asking that question, is this judicious and does this really have efficacy? Are we in line with our values? Have we hired people who, you know, seem like they're doing it? Have we, you know, is it the right set of funders, to your point, Hildy, of, you know, who's engaged? It's very, very high level questions that are catalytic thinking values questions, but not actually the, we never sign off on anything. That was a lot, but.
You just broke my brain. And the reason, and I'm not going to be able to articulate because you broke my brain. So the first question that occurred to me as you were talking is, are those three or four people the board? So that's the first question. If those three or four people are the board and they have no, they can't do anything if they don't cross check with this body, which is the integrity body, which actually matters more, what is that relationship? I you broke my brain, but I'm like really playing with okay, three people, you sign off on the three documents we have to send to somebody. And does the board then have somebody they have to answer to? Do we set it up? I know we're talking structurally. Do we set something up where that is like this? Is it co-board? I mean, are we creating something that makes any legal sense? My brain just broke. I'm sorry.
So I think in some countries in Europe, they have sort of like a main board, and you mean it's slightly irrelevant to the conversation, but those are the people that are paid. They're non-exec directors and exec directors, so it includes some staff, includes some people who are paid, and they spend, you mean a lot of time going through those boring type things that Justin has talked about. They'll sort of like be setting the budget, blah blah blah, and you know, I mean, I'm sure you've all heard those arguments before about one of the problems that board members have is that they have this information deficit in comparison to the paid staff. So therefore, you know, like they're always sort of trying to catch up in terms of governance. But so you have a main board, and then separately, I mean, in a way that Eli has talked about, you have this sort of oversight board, all of whom are unpaid. So they're entirely voluntary roles. So they don't have a financial stake in the organization, which is also important because, you know, you must have come across the argument that once you become a paid board member, you have a financial incentive for that organization to grow all the time. So separating those sort of two things out, and with the specific point being that one aspect of that role, it's to hold you to account to the mission, but it's not the purpose of that is not so that you can have detailed oversight of the day-to-day operation. I'll see if I can find a blog post that someone wrote recently about this sort of thing.
And actually, to add to that, Carl, my advisory board does consist of some people who've invested in the company. So it's kind of a hybrid, which I guess is what we're kind of stepping into here in this kind of discussion, is could it be that there's some people who are paid and are right hardcore compliance focused, and some who are simply here to do those integrity checks and to do those values checks. And I quickly just, you know, I'm learning about what a 990 is as we speak. So I love that about being here. And, you know, I stumbled on GuideStar, right? And I get one free search. So I quickly put in creating the future. And I'm glad to see that, you know, everything is on the up and up at a very basic level. But, you know, there's a whole, you know, list of, you know, of just different, you know, aspects of the organization that haven't been entered here, right? You know, board leadership and governance, right? CEO oversight, ethics and transparency, those are optional things that could be entered into GuideStar, which I think would be really great to kind of help, once again, for those who are looking at the organization through a finer lens, they could see all of those things, really low-hanging fruit, to be able to kind of like, you know, put financials in here, which I guess that is a paid feature. So I think this could be a great kind of rubric to make sure that all the things that matter are being broadcasted to whoever's looking at the organization.
I keep coming back to the fact, and I think it's why my brain sort of went, the things that are most important to the compliance people are, and I think we all universally have agreed on this and have talked this to death over the past however many years, are not the most important thing to accomplishing a mission. So the things that are most important to the IRS, the things that are most important to whomever that we need to comply with are not going to, we could be completely compliant and file our IRS forms and do everything that we need to do and accomplish absolutely nothing. And we all know many organizations that do that. And so there's a part of me that's really seeing us taking seriously what we have taken seriously so far, which is that the board is about our integrity, is about accomplishing the mission, and that we have this group of people who may or may not be board members who, as Carl and Justin, you both said, report to the board, whether it's quarterly, whether it's once a year, however often, I don't care. But that report to the board so that the board can tick that box, so that the board can say, we as a board have done, we know this has filed, we know this has filed, we know this has filed, we know this is done. That it be sort of, you know, in the standard board language, committee work, and not the work of the board, and that it be something that could even be handled in a consent agenda on a board meeting that is just, did it happen? Or we can do it out loud and celebrate that it happened. But I guess where I'm feeling is I want us to be giving it the appropriate weight and not the weight that others say it should have because they have a stake in making sure that it has that weight, if that makes sense. Justin, do you have a link to the page in the Standards for Excellence that has that checklist? I'd love to see the checklist.
See if I can find it.
See if you can find it, that would be awesome. And I can't help but likening it to an audit committee. And I know that audit committees frequently are independent because you want your auditor to be independent. But what it says is they can be, is that, you know, 9/10 of the roles that people say boards, quote, should have, don't need to be boards and shouldn't be.
And if I could just say one thing, because I think some of this may be also coming up for me because I look at so many boards that I've worked with and others that I've just crossed paths with and ones I've served on. So I'll own this too. We have no idea what we're doing with when it comes to regard with the real efficacy of the work that's being done. And like, even in sort of the more traditional board setting, like we're all making this push, like, are you talking to people in the community to figure out whether your organization is actually, you know, good at it? So like, we're already sort of admitting that boards aren't good at this anyways. And so actually what I feel like we're doing is we're saying, okay, like we're actually trying to create the body that is sort of that community advisory entity here with this integrity body, and you know we're sort of starting from there, is to say here is a group of people who genuinely care about systems change and things that advance system change and are trying to figure things out in that space and explore it. And these are the ones who we want. And it needs to be more than just, you know, the however seven of us that are sitting here, but, which is why it's so nice that we could invite people. Like when we stop saying this is a board meeting and we start saying this is talking about the integrity of an organization and a process, we can invite more voices to it. And we can invite those voices saying, you have just as much a voice as anybody else here to inform whether or not this feels right. It feels like it's working or there's evidence that it's working. And you are part of the voice that then gives advice back to the board, you know, this group of three or four people that basically has to say yay or nay on the legal stuff that's there. And so I guess that's part of where, I mean, that's part of why it's sort of boiling up for me so much is to say, I feel like we have this opportunity to actually structure that. Are you talking to the community that's affected by what you do before you, to codify or to authenticate the actual check marks that you're making on the budget, on the policy, on the, again, which is, I mean, it's like, I don't know, you know, this is the only time that I could say I've ever sat in a board where I feel like I actually know, like I, what's going on. Like everywhere else, I'm like, well, I'm not part of the community that this organization is serving. So I don't really know that. And I'm not part of the operations. So I don't really know what it takes to do that. So I'm just sitting here like, thanks for inviting me. Another 2 hours that I can give you my opinion, but that's about it. Sorry.
You know, I'm reflecting back on the fact that when we first started blowing this thing up, the questions, and we started to look at the integrity piece. So we, you know, several years into the blowing it up and started to really focus on the integrity piece. The question we were addressing was about meeting the expectations and commitments we had made to whomever we had made commitments. And we talked about community, and we talked about that was the primary role of the board, was to ensure that we were meeting those expectations and commitments in a way that aligned with our values. And I can't think of any more important question. We started to ask the question at that time, how will we know? And that's what triggered the memory for me, Justin, is that you, is that whole thing of having the conversations. And you know, gets back to our being ambassadors in a different way. How will we know if we are meeting the expectations and commitments that we have made to folks? And I think such a small piece of that is, did you file your 990? And you tick the box and we say, yes, we did. Did the board review the 990? Yes, they did. They thought it was awesome. I think there's the huge questions when it comes to integrity around compensation policy, around hiring. Those to me are the most important questions, and that the compliance piece is just so small. It's just so small. And just because others think that that's the most important, is that the stamp that we want to put on them? Or do we want to put them in a place that we think is systemically more viable, which is that's a support to the organization. That is a support that just keeps us legal. And it's as if we, you know, each of us has families. In your family, do you live and breathe based on the fact that you filed your taxes? Is that like the only thing in all 12 months of the year that you talk about at the dinner table, that you talk about it? We filed our taxes. Are we going to file our taxes? Where are we going to put that in our taxes? I would really love to see us relegate that to the position that we think it deserves while remaining compliant. And to me, that's a committee thing. To me, that's, I'm rethinking my brain blowing up, is that, to me, that's a support for the board in its integrity role. We need to know with integrity that these things were done, that they were done well. It's a support to the board in its integrity role and not the thing that guides us. And I think we're all saying sort of the same thing.
I'm curious, Carl and Vu, because you two have most recently been on the executive side. I mean, where you would have to confront something like this. And so, yeah, because we are talking about trying to model something even beyond creating the future, I'm just curious from the two of you, because it's easy for me, not in that position recently, to make stuff up.
Well, I'm still on a board and another board as well, as sort of having been on the sort of the other side, sort of speak. I mean, for me, the experience in a few different places, the thing that I sort of see all the time that is, I mean, presumably, you know, I mean, hard to get right is where's the boundary and clarity about roles and what each other is doing. And how at times a desire and willingness on the part of boards to help can get muddled and end up leading to sort of confusion about who's doing what. I think that's, it's right and proper that boards obviously, you know, I mean, hold us to account as the exec. But so much of, I think so much of this, again, so much of this from what I can see from talking to other people about their experience is that it's done badly. And it's because boards, it's Justin's point about boards are trying to hold you to account on the basis that they've got 20% of the information that you've got. And the frustrating thing at times is that because of the nature of boards is that they might have a different 20% to your 100%, because someone is going to the board directly and telling them something that you don't know. Sorry, I don't know if this is helping.
First of all, I think 20% is extremely generous, Carl. I'm not so sure. I think that we might be focused too much on the 990, as Hildy said. People lie on those things. They're not the most reliable. I mean, they're just formulaic and formality. I think what we need to focus on is a little bit what you said about compensation and hiring. Right now, the field is talking about co-directorship, about flat hierarchical structures, about equity and pay. Those things are going to be more important for us to set some values and frameworks around. Otherwise, we're going to hire staff who will continue using the same sort of status quo philosophies in doing everything, because that's the default model. You know, unless this board comes in and says, look, we're going to do things differently. Everyone's going to get paid the same or whatever it is that we decide, right? Then they're gonna use the same HR practices, the same evaluations practices, the same board staff dynamics that they've learned. So I think that's probably more important for us, like figure out like what do we need to do, think we think are essential as we bring on a new team.
And to that point, one of the things that you're making me think about, Vu. Just as I was seeing, if the highest potential of this board, and again, going back into catalytic thinking, if the highest potential of this board is to meet the expectations of our community about accomplishing our mission and doing it with integrity. All of the, and I was seeing that one of what basically is a condition for success of that is that this board know, are we legally compliant? One tiny piece of it. All of those other questions are also conditions for success. Are we, is compensation, is our compensation policy meeting the expectations of our community about accomplishing our mission with integrity? Is our hiring policy meeting the expectation of community? That each of those are pieces that feed into that, and that we may want a committee or a person or a report or a did you tick the box on each of those, whether it's annually, whether it's 6 months, whichever we want, we say we want, but on each of those to say, are those meeting our expectations with integrity? And I think that's a question to be asking about the filing of compliance things, and we don't have that many. You know, are our state and federal filings meeting the expectations of our community with integrity? Tick the box. Now let's move on and have a juicy conversation about something that matters. But I'm seeing all of those as individual things that feed into that big banner, which is, are we meeting the expectations of our community about accomplishing our mission with integrity? And that each of those sub-answers that have to do with all the stuff we do is a sub-answer that feeds into that. May have a committee, may have a person, may have a staff person, may have a...
I would say we might be overthinking compliance. I mean, it's here's a checklist and I don't really care as long as... And the thing about compliance is that there's really not much room for us to debate about stuff, right? So there's, we can assign, we can just delegate this to the staff and just have them figure this out. I want us to caution, and then apologies, I do have to leave because I'm harassing a foundation after this about community-centric fundraising. But I don't want us to get back into, again, that sort of like the fish model of what we were thinking about in terms of board staff relations, operations, et cetera. And I think we do kind of start approaching that too much when we start thinking about these things, having these conversations. So I don't know. Like, I want us to be expansive, as you said, Hildy, about what do we need to fulfill our mission? And maybe it looks completely different. Maybe we delegate, maybe we outsource this completely to someone else. You know, maybe we find an HR company that is aligned with equity, that's led by people of color, and we just ask them to just do all this for us by outsourcing. I mean, these are things we need to start thinking about, and not just the same traditional way, because, you know, we're not about the traditional way.
Well, it seems the perfect place to leave our meeting because we have 4 minutes left. And Vu, I know you need to go harass a foundation, which go get them. Any reflections? Yours was a beautiful reflection. Any additional reflections before you bop off, Vu?
Thanks, everyone. Thanks for the article, Eli. And it's really great to have you on the team. Carl, it's great to see you, Dimitri, Justin, Angie, and Hildy, of course. Yeah, I appreciate us. And I'm sorry I've been a little bit out of touch with everything going on personally over here. But just want to let you know that I appreciate you all. And I miss you all.
Thanks, Vu.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
By the way, Vu.
Thank you, everyone. See you later.
Bye.
So let's take a deep breath. This has been a big one. In and out. Out is always a good thing to remember. And if y'all would share, if there's anything you took notes on, if you'll circle what stood out to you and just share what is standing out to you in our conversation today.
Sorry, go ahead, Eli. I'll go after you.
Just real quick, so I drew a little image where one side says draw a fish, one side says draw a fish with an example. One's eclectic and one's more similar. So that's kind of my takeaway, is to invite openness.
Love it. I love it. Angie.
My observations are that it's really hard to move outside of what we already know. And I feel like today we made some good progress on some areas. That is great. I still am wondering about who we're going to invite to our next meeting. And also, I think we got sometimes into discussion that we didn't follow catalytic thinking to the degree that we have with some other discussions. And there's definitely a different feel and, yeah, experience around that. Those are my observations for today. And I appreciate all of you and the discussion.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me. Sometimes you need to sort of dance into a discussion so that we can do sort of the listening part, the having everybody sort of voice their stuff and then go into more catalytic thinking. Because otherwise it's going to come out anyway. So I think and I love the fact, Angie, that it's so noticeable when we're not in catalytic thinking versus the of what it feels like. Thank you for that. I will share my reflection while you all are thinking. I have two. One, I'm feeling really wonderful that we completed the recruitment piece and that we can start inviting folks just to conversations, even if they're just one-on-one conversations with each of us on creating the future that eventually grow into, would you like to come hang out for the board conversation? And so I feel really good about that. And I wrote down what Vu said before he left about, quote, outsourcing the compliance piece. And that just went ding, 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 ding in my head. So that's what's standing out to me as we're leaving. Who else? What is standing out to you from our meeting today, from our conversation?
Well, the first thing that's standing out for me is that I'm worried that my notes are not very good. So I think probably more than ever this time, you're going to have to supplement them because it's very difficult to engage in a conversation right at the same time. I think I feel like we made progress today, which I think is good. In a slightly funny way, left me feeling maybe it's the discussion about recruitment is thinking about where is this now in our longer arc of things that we're going to be discussing in future board meetings. And I guess sort of thinking that, you know, and given the ambitions that we have about how do we maintain momentum and how do we get momentum?
Wonderful. There's lots of good stuff happening, and I can't wait to talk about it next time.
My reflection as I looked at my notes and was thinking about this is you don't have to be anything other than yourself to be part of this process, organization, entity, committee, board, pick the word, that integrity is about your values, so your position is irrelevant coming into this.
Justin, Eli, what is standing out to each of you?
I know Eli had his fish.
That's true, absolutely. And I even wrote it.
So he may have more, but... Well, as one of the people that jumped the catalytic thinking shark into that water, and some of it may just be also, I think, the nature of there are moments that each of us bring something that we have actually thought through a lot of this, and so we are jumping to a conclusion that perhaps not everyone else has arrived at. Or we haven't collectively gone through. And yeah, so I think I go back to, you know, some of what you were just saying, Dimitri, which is, or you said earlier around, we are now at a point where actually thinking about the language really matters. And we have, and, you know, we sort of already established early on this idea of a minimally viable board, whatever is that entity thing. So I know I expressed it pretty strongly of trying to think about this group as something not that. Like, we're not defining this as a board anymore. We're using this space to define what that little board thing is, that minimal viable board, whether it's outsourcing or something structural. But I do feel that the recruitment and orientation really did open up that conversation of, this is something different. It is not a board. We're not redefining a board anymore. We're actually defining integrity capacity now and what a body looks like that provides that. And so I guess that's both a reflection and sort of a request and an acknowledgement of kind of where we are, and maybe language actually really does matter now more than we've been, because I feel like we all sort of did that today. Like, we went back and forth between, well, board person, like being yourself, not being invited to a board. I mean, we said it in a lot of different ways, which just really makes me think, I think we might be done with this language.
Beautiful.
But that might be something to reflect on for a whole nother meeting.
Yeah, well, and I love, I wrote down and underlined the words integrity capacity. That you know, okay, so as we're talking about everything from budgeting to hiring to compensation to et cetera, what is, you know, what provides integrity capacity to the board? To this group, to whomever we are. a lot of brain bending stuff. Yeah, Carl.
Yeah, I really like that phrase as well, integrity capacity. Because also, you mean, it's just got me thinking that also, like, the not just language, but role of boards traditionally, it's not integrity, it's oversight. And when you think about the role of capacity for integrity, it's just so different. So,
God, there's lots of little stickies going on my bulletin board. But integrity versus oversight.
Sorry, just what, you know what also just made me think? And the reason I thought about that, sorry, just because language is important, you're right. You know what made me think of this? Facebook. What have Facebook built? They've built an oversight board. It's not giving them any integrity from what I can see. It's not giving them any oversight, actually, from what I can see. And for me, that's an example of how it shouldn't work. And what we want is almost, what we want should be the antithesis of the Facebook oversight board.
So that will be our tagline at the website. We are not Facebook. Wonderful to be with
you. More integrity than Facebook.
Wonderful, wonderful to be with all of you. Sorry we ran a little bit late. Eli, it is a joy to have you here. And I just wanted
Thank
to
you.
Say that one more time. And we'll see all of you next month when we will start diving into this integrity conversation. I'll be asking all of you off this in email who wants to facilitate that conversation next month. And for now, just deep gratitude to all of you. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Next month.
Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Bye-bye.